No problem.
So Sam, Eric, I just wanted to pipe in and thank you for taking the time to share your story. And
no problem.
You know, you're an inspiration to everyone. And just quickly, I just wanted to say that Sam worked very hard developing his computer skills so he could interface with various flick switches and text voice output so that he could read the material and so on. And many hours was put into that, and as a result, he is able to do what he's currently doing now. So I just wanted to help people understand how he transitioned into a higher role, and he persevered and put a lot of hours into it. So
yeah, thank you very much, Eric.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks, Eric, and thank you, Sam. We're going to move to the next item, which is the consumer satisfaction survey. And Diana, thank you very much for waiting a little bit longer than expected. The guest speaker is Diana Cohen, and she is a professor at Central Connecticut through the Center for Public Policy and Social Research. So, Diana, good morning again.
Well, hello everybody. Thank you so much for having me at this meeting. I'm here today just to talk a little bit about the VR satisfaction survey and to talk a little bit about a conversation that I had with Cheryl and Mary about responding to the idea of increasing sample size within our survey and some methodological updates. So We at the Center for Public Policy and Social Research at Central Connecticut State University have been working on this project since the first year I was at CCSU in 2009, taking over from UConn, who had done it for many years prior. So you have a bit of longitudinal data that has been captured over time, where the same questions have been asked to the very same population, allowing you to make comparisons to see how your consumers are considering various aspects of the VR program. There's great value in that in terms of being able to see the trends, the ebbs, the flows, to see what's working, what's not working, to also see how external variables such as the pandemic, for example, may be impacting certain services. So the conversation that Cheryl and Mary and myself had was concerning the National Federation for the Blind and their query about sample size, saying that a sample size of 30 is a little bit small, perhaps from their liking, wondering how to expand that sample size. So conversation that we had, the question that was asked was, do we want to somehow expand the population, the grouping of people that are actually being surveyed? And I responded and I said, no, I think that you should keep that the population, the grouping of individuals that you are surveying, to be consistent as with prior years. So to maintain the integrity of the ability to do that longitudinal analysis. So if you were to change and to somehow expand the number of people that are being involved to include people that are perhaps currently in the VR program but haven't had a case closure or some other group within BSBY, that would, I think, fundamentally change then your ability to look over time and to speak with integrity about what shifts in data you may be seeing. So Mary and I and Cheryl had a really productive conversation about maybe some adjustments that we can make to try to improve our sample size, or to improve our response rate, I should say. And I just want to say that overall, our response rate is, I think, very strong. We're at roughly 50%. We were at 50% last year. We're currently at 53% for the current survey that we are doing. And that is a pretty strong number when it comes to kind of trends within the survey research industry. However, we're always looking to improve. And part of the issue is that our sample to begin with is not particularly large. So there was only 56 clients last year. Thus far, we are at, let's see what we have this year, 36 thus far. So we will likely have more for this current year. However, it's still a dwindling number from years past. So it makes it a little bit more tricky. You want to try to make sure that you can not just contact everyone, but try to get them to participate. So the conversation was about how can we expand that participation base. And something that we had settled on as an idea is to follow up with individuals who we are unable to reach and to distribute the survey electronically. So currently we at CPPSR are making adjustments to make sure that the survey is can be used with adaptive technology. So that is requiring us to update the survey in a number of ways. So we currently have some color coding, for example, some font sizing that does not work, but we are making those adjustments and we'll be sending them for review so that we can have one of your adaptive technology specialists take a look at it and to see how this would appear on the screens with specialty readers. So our hope is that really at no additional cost, very minimal effort on our part, really we are just producing a link that someone can then review. Hopefully that would yield maybe some additional responses, which would be welcomed. So we are of course continuing our traditional methodology, which is where we call individuals and we call continuously. We generally call up to 10 or 11 attempts. But the issue is that some individuals on the list don't pick up the phone. And we do leave voicemails, but sometimes we don't get return phone calls. We have found that leaving voicemails can be fruitful. So some individuals might use their caller ID as a screener. And when we call, it comes up as State of Connecticut, which could be who knows. So some people don't pick up, and we do find that when we leave a voicemail and an explanation as to why we're calling, sometimes we do get some callbacks, but there are still a large percentage of individuals who do not respond. So we are looking to reach out to those individuals in new ways, and we think that an electronic survey distribution would be an interesting test to see how fruitful that might be. So our plan is to actually use either one or two of the current quarters, or upcoming quarters, I should say, Q3 or Q4 for the current survey that we're working on, and to distribute that survey electronically to those that do not respond to the phone survey. So hopefully we can get a little bit of an uptick in our response rate. But Mary had suggested that there might be, you know, just a little bit of uncertainty as to how to respond to the National Federation of the Blind's query about that low response rate, and do you need to make any further methodological adjustments? And I would say no, I would not recommend that, because I think that the value of being able to make comparisons over time is really what you have, you know, is a great facet of this project. I would say that you have so many years behind you to be able to look and to see those trends. So hopefully maybe with this methodological adjustment, and if BESBE is able to see more clients coming through the VR program in future years, that would also give us a more rich sample size to draw from. So I just wanted to share those updates, and we will be, hopefully I would say within the next few days, in a position to share our survey link with the adaptive technology specialist to run that, pass that by them, and to see if the how things look on the screen, to make sure that the clients are able to take the survey with e-readers. But otherwise, I'm welcoming of any questions that you might have, or if you're anything that you're wondering about, if you're still kind of concerned about the National Federation for the Blind's, you know, query about the response rate.
So McGaldick has a question, Professor. Hi, a couple actually. I'm not a statistician, so I'm just curious how, if well, before that, actually, are the questions asked in the survey, are those, where do those come from? Are those part of federal law, VR? Where do the questions come from? Number two, does it matter whether you have 50 or 500 people being surveyed if you're just looking at the, we're only given a positivity rate, you know, positive outcome? And three, without addressing all people in the VR program, I think the number gets skewed because, of course, you're getting that high positivity rate because people are satisfied because they got a job. If only people who received employment are being polled, it's not going to say what the VR program is doing in total with people who maybe had a tough time or dropped out for one reason or another. So those are not being included in the survey.
Okay. So where did the questions come from? So this was a...
Bill, thank you for beating me to the punch on that one. But yeah, these are questions that I think a lot of us have around methodology and the reasoning for why the people who are considered viable candidates for the survey, not necessarily around those who actually respond, but those who are allowed to even receive the survey, is so small.
Okay, so I'll try to answer in order. So the question about where did the survey come from? So the survey it was created by BESB and the SRC, and it dates back to UConn's time, so in consultation with UConn. And so the survey has had a few minor adjustments over the years, but not many. And that's to maintain the kind of the integrity of being able to look at that one, the analysis over time. So since the survey came to CCSU, we have made some additions to the survey, some very small ones regarding higher ed services. So we ask if you attend part-time or full-time, we ask if you graduated. But otherwise, the questions have remained dating back to, I believe, 2003. So, if part of your questioning might be, is there room to make adjustments to questions in the future? You certainly can, but keep in mind that if you were to ever change the wording of a question, then that would make it difficult to compare over time. So you can always add questions, and then you're kind of starting, that's a starting point to measure new trends, but to make significant overhaul of questions that already exist, you kind of have to weigh the pros and cons of that. So you may be able to capture data in a new way with some language changes, but then you can't, necessarily make direct comparisons to how people responded in the prior surveys. So
Okay. No, I understand that. It just seems like it's like a kid giving themselves the ability to grade their own paper. So we're getting this great positivity rate, but I want to make sure that the services are being provided in a manner which helps everybody. And if people are not getting help, we need to know that as well. Why are only 30 people out of hundreds of people in the SRC roles getting surveyed? It's not giving true data to what we're doing or not doing correctly. And that's my opinion.
I'm not so much concerned about the questions themselves as we are the audience for the questions.
Right, I understand, certainly, and a number of questions were just raised, so I'm just trying to answer all of them, give them all airtime, if you will. So this survey is of those who have case closures. So if you are looking for, a broader survey to capture those who are currently in the VR program, that can certainly be done, and that would be a separate, a more expansive but separate population. So I think you have to ask, what are you trying to learn as the SRC, and what does this data represent? And that is case closures. So that is the thread of continuity. If you're looking to survey those that are active in the VR program without case closures, then I think that could be, a separate survey that could be considered of those who are currently active. But the grouping of, who who are the individuals that are included in this survey has remained constant, albeit, yes, small compared to the larger of your population, but it represents that segment of case employment case closures. As for the question of, the question was, how, why does it matter if it's 50 people or 500 responding? You know, we get the sample of individuals in any fiscal year with those case closures. We now get them on a quarterly basis. And so our response rate represents, you know, our ability to reach out to those individuals. And so dwindling, it is a number that has been on the decline. So at one point there were, you know, 150 case closures in any fiscal year. And that's not the case right now. Hopefully things can start to pick up again with the pandemic easing. But, you know, it's a kind of this dwindling number is a facet of, I think, multiple factors. And when you think about the response rate, it's the equation for considering response rate would be the same irrespective of if it's 500 people or 50 people. Right, your goal is to try to reach out to as many as possible. And consistently, like I said, we've reached about, or we've been able to do completed surveys with 50 to roughly about 53% of the population. Now, I definitely hear your concern about, you know, is this, what is this representative of? And so I think that's what you have to keep in mind, is that you, this survey is targeting a very specific subset of VR clients. And that is not, it's not meant to be emblematic of the totality. But if that's something that you felt the SRC wanted to pursue, is to understand more of a, you know, the totality of people's experiences, not just those with case closures, that would be, you know, a kind of a an additional conversation to have. And we
could, I just jump in for a second, Diana? I'm just agreeing, this is Kendra, with the other comments. Is there a way to do this survey inclusive of, you know, everybody? We have case closures and those still searching. Can it just almost start with, was your case closed in the last 6 months, 3 months? I have no idea what I'm talking about, but I'm just using that as an example. And then others, you know, no, you know, yes or no. And then it goes into other areas of the survey, because for me, it just seems like, as others have already said, they're closed, so there's some success there. But how about the people who've been searching for a year, 2 years, 3 years? It's more important to know the challenges and what we can do to help them and make it better. Mm-hmm. I think that is imperative.
On top of that, I'd like to add, maybe I heard it wrong for the past year and a half. It was represented to me, at least, I believe, that the survey was of people who, you know, actually gained employment. Now, I've never heard the term closed cases. So maybe there's confusion there. Are these just files that were closed, or are these people, I thought we were just serving those who were able to get a job?
Those who have employment, but I guess also including homemaker. So there's, I guess, a wide scope of what can consider, you know, the case closure. People who voluntarily kind of choose to exit. And I don't think we have that many, and my suspicion is probably not that many that choose to voluntarily choose to exit on their own. So I would say, you know, if the SRC wanted to, we could very easily adapt this survey to everyone in VR. It would, you know, you'd have then a parallel analysis where we could do you know, the current analysis, the current grouping, and then we could have a separate analysis of those who are still active in the VR program. It is totally something that we can do, and you have the survey already developed. In fact, you could choose to make adaptations if you wanted, or if you wanted to use the same metrics to compare those who have exited to those who are currently in the program, you can do that as well. That would actually be an interesting point of comparison. But that's something that the SRC would have to decide, you know, is that, what is the data that you are looking for? And also, what are your federal reporting mandates?
Correct.
You know, what do you, what do you have to report on?
If I could just, like, interject a disagreement. to leave, Diana. We can continue this conversation afterwards. You know, it has to be taken consideration how the processing of our cases are. So if we're surveying individuals who are currently employed but aren't yet closed, you know, they will eventually be surveyed, you know, when they're closed. So the population that it appears we're searching for are individuals who are not employed, you know, whether they're closed unsuccessfully or whether they're inactive, I guess, because there's a lot of individuals who are not engaged. You know, so there's a lot of different categories within our program. You know, so if we're asking to survey individuals who are currently employed receiving services, they will get surveyed at some point. They just haven't moved. You know, so it's really deciding to survey unemployed versus employed is really kind of the answer. So, you know, just the only comment that I would have is our survey currently is designed to survey individuals who have received services. So if we're surveying individuals who are not employed, they may not have received services, so it wouldn't apply. So I would have to agree with Diana, it would be a whole nother survey. Like, it would be a whole different task in a whole different survey. There are maybe individuals who are not employed that have received services that may be relevant, but it would not be a lot based on the survey that we have. It would be our college students or individuals who are currently looking for employment. But it would have to be individuals who are engaged.
Understood. I was just confused whether we were just surveying people who got jobs or people whose cases were closed, because I've never heard it come out that way.
Yeah, it's basically both. It's people, it's the individuals who are employed and closed. So we're not surveying individuals who are closed as an unsuccessful closure, which means we are not surveying those individuals. So there's a few different ways to close individuals, but we call it Savis 26, which is a successful closure. And like Diana said, in the past, we had 150 individuals. The law changed at some point to not serve individuals who are homemakers, which is the start of why the numbers would have decreased significantly. We had 150 to 200 closures when we were serving homemakers. We are not allowed by law to serve homemakers anymore. So immediately when that happened, the numbers averaged about, I would say the highest I've seen it is around 110. I think our population is shrinking anyway, just in regards to individuals coming into the agency, which is another global issue. So I would say our average is around 100, you know, and obviously due to COVID, it was half that.
Okay, so if we're just polling or surveying closed successful outcomes, of course we're going to get a high positivity rate. So I don't know what that data tells us or how it helps shape the programming where the service is being provided.
I would say that things are not universally positive. You can still identify areas of weakness, and I don't mean to sound harsh, but that is it is the truth. So you keeping in mind the population that you're dealing with. And yes, I can understand the concern. Aren't these people, could they perhaps be inherently biased? It is that population that you're serving is consistent over the years. So at least, you know, this is the grouping of who we are dealing with. And there are areas of deficit that have emerged. And I believe that there have been valuable conversations and updates that have been able to be made in light of that data. So for example, looking at transportation services, I know that has been, you know, year after year, an area that has been of difficulty, and I'm working with Brian, I know that there were conversations about creating relationships with Uber or Lyft to try to help get individuals, you know, to their jobs or to interviews. So, you know, overall, I would say in general, are people, you know, people would recommend Mesby to a friend, but there, you know, if you dig into the data, there are definitely areas of weakness. So I don't think it's quite like a fair characterization to say that everything is positive. And you can definitely see trends over years where you can see, you know, movement towards more positive ratings or movement towards more dissatisfaction. It's not like things are just stagnant and everything is you know, rated 8, 9, and 10. That is definitely not the case.
Okay, I can appreciate that. Thank you. But one thing that does not go with what you were saying with the continuity, if we have stopped polling homemakers or serving homemakers as not a VR success anymore, those have been polled for decades now. So the data is now a little bit different than it would have been taking those people into consideration, because they're not dealing with the same issues as education or services or transportation. So how do we adjust for that?
Well, I think federal reporting requirements kind of dictate the playing field here, right? So if you are with this, if you have to make this report, it has to be federally available, and that body tells you, you know, how you can classify groups, then that does, you know, kind of shape the methodological choices. And so, you know, I think at this point, all you can do is to just acknowledge, you know, the shift that has transpired there over the years. But beyond that, you know, I think if there's a larger classification judgment that is being made above BSBY, you know, more on the federal level, then, you know, you have to abide by that.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate your thoughtful answers and look forward to working with you to perhaps modify this a little bit and utilize your experience and skills. Thank you.
Of course. And I'll just say, you know, I really appreciate our continued relationship. And if you do feel that you would like to survey, you know, an additional grouping of individuals, we can certainly talk about that. But I would just, you know, kind of reiterate that would be a separate project different from what we currently do, and I would not minimize, you know, I certainly understand the kind of the pause that you have in wondering, you know, the value of this data, but I would encourage you to recognize that I think that there's very rich value there. So it is a particular perspective. You know, and you might think it's a limited perspective, but it is a valuable perspective. Is it everyone's perspective? No, that's not the intention of this project. So I think you have to go back and ask, you know, what is the, what does this data represent? And does it represent it? Is it an honest reflection of that group? So if you're looking for something that's, you know, larger, this is what everyone in VR thinks, that is not this project. That's not the purpose of this project or what we have done over the years. So it's not to say you can't, you know, design a project that does that, but just recognize that this is a smaller scope. But the scope, you know, what the data has to show is a accurate reflection of that grouping.
Very good, thank you. I think that will be our job then to determine what actually is required by the federal government with respect to a survey or data. Thanks again.
All right, thank you. So I'm sorry I have to sign off, everybody. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
Sorry.
That had to be Gary.
Yes, my class. Sorry.
We'll move to item number D, or letter D, landed. Mary, did you want to give an update on that?
Sure, and I'll give my update. If Cheryl has you know, anything to add, feel free to jump in, Cheryl. We did complete our state plan. I want to thank everyone who participated in the work group that we had in collaboration with our advisory board. We came up with some new innovative good goals to work on. And we, you know, discussed anything that has changed. What this was, actually, I should back up a little bit. Our state plan was submitted back in 2020, you know, that we initiated a 4-year state plan, and every 2 years, RSA